session number 24731, Reel 3.
Mr. Emery, Reel 3. We're talking about sort of a typical day's training, you know. Was there any other types of training you
field,
had?
Field craft.
What was that? Tell me about field craft.
Well, you go out in the woods or in the fields around the Worley Barracks area, which is now the forward headquarters. I think car headquarters now is gone altogether. But you used to go out there, and they used to have one of the Lance Corporal. He was an ex, as a long servant, he'd been called back in. He used to go out there and lie down in the long grass, perhaps 200 or 300 yards away, and you'd have to, he'd fire off a blank shot then, and you'd have to try, you know, he taught you all the 12 o'clock, you know, 12 o'clock or middle distance and all things like that.
Describe me where someone is.
Yeah, describe him. Try and find him. We did all that sort of trying to pick out where he was, and also finding your way around. They used to take it. They took us out during the day. We had a penny sweepstake on this. All the 30 of us put a penny in, an old penny, and we split up into squads of five. And then they took us out and took us round this mar route through the woods. Said, "Now pay attention to where you're going." Of course, it was a skiving afternoon as far as we were concerned. All this wandering around with our denims on. And then at night, when it was dark, they said, "Right, out you go. First one's back wins a sweep, but you go round the other way." Of course, that was it then. You could hear voices in the dark. "Oh, not bloody that way, it's this way," and all this sort of business. Anyway, we won the 30 pence, 2 and 6 pence, yeah, which we shared between the five of us, yeah. They taught that was the sort of thing, orientation and things like that.
What about tactics, you know, how to advance, how to defend? Just simple stuff.
None
of that. Just field craft.
Dig a slit trench. They taught you how to dig a slit trench.
So how would you do that? Tell me about that.
Well, they taught you how to say dig. It was soft earth. How to, if you've got twigs or branches to sort of fortify the side so that the trench don't collapse and things like that. Was all I can remember about
how
that.
How deep?
Well, we went down about 4 feet, you know. But he never. You've got to look at it. I don't think they had the time to teach you all they wanted to. So you get, say, 2 hours on trench digging or whatever it was, and that was it. You know, you've done it, and that was it. So that was your 6 weeks, really. PT twice a week, or three times a week.
Now, how did you get on with the rest of the lads? So you said someone nicked yourself first.
I don't know who that was. Could be anybody.
What were the lads like?
Well, it was all right. It was all sorts. There was a womanizer. There was a City of London policeman there who could speak several languages, and after about the second or third week there, he had orders to report to the office, and we came back over and changed him from PT for something else. The last man on parade and cleans the fire buckets out and all that sort of business. He was packing his car, he must have been sent to some special unit. He went, but they were all sorts of walks of life, you know, really.
Was there any bullying or any trouble, or was it?
I never seen any aggro. No, they could, didn't have any aggro in the camp. There was two NCOs there, you know, in the huts. And apart from that, you will.
Then how did you go with the NCOs and the instructors? What were they? How did they treat you? How good were they? How bad were they?
Corporal Major, I got on quite well with him. He was a London chap. Yeah, he was always referred to him as corporal. He got made up to sergeant, so it was quite apt, Sergeant Major. In the end, he was quite the Lance Corporal. He was, well, he must have been in his late 40s, I think. He never mixed much with the, well, we're only boys, lads, 18s, 19s mostly, you know. I don't think there was any old ones in it. They were all that age. But I can remember once we were marching over onto the parade ground at Slope Arms, and we'd go on for a foot drill or something, because rifle drill. And there was a couple of them talking, and all of a sudden he walks up with the side, and out the side of his mouth, he said, "Oh, I bloody hear anybody talking, and I'll clout him." And that was it. that was a Lance Corporal. So that's the only thing I remember about him. He was a smart chap, man. He looked so he'd been a long time. He knew all about when he dressed. He looked a soldier sort of business.
But what about the other instructors? Were they fair, or were they good at their job?
We had the same two instructors all the time.
Just those corporal and sergeant. That was
They taught us all the basics of life. They were infantrymen, I should imagine. They were well, corporal major, I imagine, was a TA man. Oh, got caught up, but they did us all the hand grenades and everything else, you know.
Did you see much of your officers or any officers?
Can't remember seeing any officer at all. Not the only officer I can remember. Well, I never saluted one when I was running over the Naffy, and he called me back and dressed me up in Downdale, and don't you recognise an officer? And that's the only thing I can remember about that, really. That was outside the MI room down at Warley Barracks, yeah. No, we never had... There might have been officers there, but I can't remember.
You didn't have much contact with them?
No, the MO. I can remember the MO. Yeah, the first week, all over the drill hall and all lectured on the fears of VD and loose women, you know, and all that business. And
you made much of an impression, did you?
That did. Yeah, the MOs did, yeah, because as I say, I'd already had a lecture off my father anyway before he went away about be careful, like, and all that sort of business, so...
Did it affect your behaviour? I mean, you know, because the VD warnings were quite...
Well, no, because you didn't have much of a social life, really. It was a 5.5-day week. The first week and the third week, I got my paybook out there, it's all in there, was inoculations, and they made you bad, you know, TAB.
Tell me about it, because that's... All right, the first
Saturday then, went on a Thursday. Friday we went over and seen the garrison church. Saturday morning, went for the run, and then it was inoculations at 10:30, and nobody was allowed out, TAB and TT. No separate needles then. That's what amuses me now. You go to the doctors now, and he inoculates you and throws or whatever it is, and throws a needle away, but not then. You know, you stand up there with your shirt and a bit of acroflavine and jab, jab, jab. And all. But you were bad that first weekend. Monday morning, you got a job to raise your arm up. You know what it is with right dress. Go like that and shove your arm and a bloke with a bad arm on you, give him a thump. And, but they soon worked that out with marching. But that was the first week. The second week, I think it was, we were allowed home on the Friday for a weekend, no warrant, you paid your own fare to bring home your personal kit. So you came home and that. The third weekend was more inoculations. So that was 3 weekends out of the 6 you were there. And then, I can't remember much, but the fourth, as I say, you were on, it was Saturday mornings anyway, it was normal day. And you got really, and if you were lucky or unlucky, you got detailed for church parade anyway on Sunday. You know, right, you'll see if you write church pray tomorrow morning, you know, not do you want to go to church, you were church pray. No, you never had much of it. I went to the pictures, I think, twice in Brentwood over the 6 weeks I was there.
You didn't smoke, did you drink at all?
I did a bit, but not then, funny enough, not then. It wasn't, although I used to in the home car, like, underage, I was going with the blokes because I used to stop on our way out to the barrel tanks in the pub. And have a couple of pints and go out there. But no, I never... No, I'm not...
No, so you were there, what, 6 weeks?
6 weeks, yeah.
So that would take you to up to November?
November the 11th I got posted from there.
And what was your next posting?
I went to the 52nd ACAC Regiment at Whitby. If you ever watch Heartbeat on the telly, you can see all around the Metropole Hotel where I used to do my guards there.
And
12 weeks there.
And what was your reception when you arrived? I mean,
The 11th of November, Rivalli was about 5 at Warley. We marched down to get our breakfast, all our kit bags. Well, no, you had to hand your rifle in, you didn't have any personal weapons, and that was camps, so you handed it, but you had all your kit. Marched down to Brentwood Station, it was a thick pea soup fog. We had to catch the 10 o'clock train from King's Cross. The train getting into London was... Can I tell you the episode up to Whitby?
Yes.
The train was late getting into wherever it was, I can't know, Liverpool Street, I think, from Warley. And by the time we got across, it was 4 of us going to. And the eldest one was going, he was a bit older than us, he was a married man, so he had the travel warrants for us other 3. So when we got to King's Cross, our train for York had gone, 10 o'clock, we missed it, we were late. And the next train for York was 10 o'clock at night. So we had 12 hours. He said, I'm going home. He said, you can put your kit in and wander around London. So we wandered, never been to London before. You know, it's a big city to 18. So we wandered around London, and I don't know where we were, but that must have been around Piccadilly or somewhere, around one of those places, wandering around there, looking around. We saw these two, thought we'd been clever, saw these two red caps. And they seen us 3 wandering around there like this, not bad. He thought we got a captured. There was a toilet there. So I said, we'll whip down the toilet, threw the toilet out the door of the other, but they were too clever. Us. One cup followed us down, he was waiting the other end. And so we had to go all in. It took a bit of in, you know, to prove to him that we were genuine, pay books out, and right, don't you get all this sort of business, give us a good lecture. So while we were there, a civilian come up to us and said, don't forget, we're green from the sticks. Do you want to see a show? So we all. So what's this then? He said, do you want to see a show? I said, where? What sort of a show? He said, it's a chance to see a show, he said. He said, it only cost you a penny. So straight away, we were, oh, Christ, our eyes was. So he said, look, I've asked you for the last time. He said, there's no catch. You want to see a show? He said, all right. He said, come with me. So he took us across the road, up these steps to a little office. And it was, they gave us three seats for the afternoon performance at the Victoria Palace, I think it was, Lupino Lane. The show was called 20 to 1. And we were sat in there in the afternoon performance for a penny each. We saw this, some charitable organisation looking after the troops. Yeah. But we regarded in with a... So anyway, we caught the train at 10 o'clock at night from King's Cross. Packed to the gunnels it was. I sat on my kit bag in the corridor. We got to York about 6 o'clock in the morning. Then we had a change there to Pickering. And from Pickering, we had a change to catch the train to Whitby. So we were 24 hours late, really, when we got there. Another court of inquiry, where are you late in all this business? Station was down the bottom, and we were up the top. The other side of the abbey where Dracula was supposed to have landed, the other side of the river there. We got our billets in these...
Tell me what the billets were like.
They were terrace houses. I've been out and looked at the thing since a few years ago. Look, I think I slept there. Slept on the floor, straw polyas. Four to the bedroom. One, two, yeah. Us three. Five to a bedroom.
Just ordinary civilian houses.
Yeah, yeah. Cleared right out. Nothing in there. No, well, the fireplaces, but no heat. So we were on the first floor up. And when we got there, it was forwards when it was getting dark then. And there was a chap in the corner. I didn't see him, it was that dark in there. He spoke to us, so him and I became pals. His father was a major in the artillery. But anyway, we slept on straw palliasses with the straw pillows and nothing, that was it. That was our life, and then we did our training.
It was cold. I mean,
it was blasted cold. One little incident, it was an ACAC firing camp as well, and you used to get mixed batteries there, ATS, and it must have been murder to live there, a civilian. But it used to... The ATS were billeting in the houses down the road, and they used to have fires, coke fires. So Bert and I, this chap, wife, Pilda, we used to climb over the wall down the lane at the back, pinch the coke that was stacked in their yard, and come back and light a fire in our grates up in the bedroom, well, which was not allowed, just to keep warm. So, as I say, we were still on 3 shillings a day, so we never went very far. We didn't have fire to go. Saturday's the only day.
How come you'd been sent to the anti-aircraft regiment, you know, 56 AA? Why not to the infantry?
That's where I think those tests, I must have done well at Morse, because it was a signal training regiment.
You were trained as a signaller?
Signaller, yeah. I was a regimental signaller, yeah. A driver operator, which is the proper name.
Well, take me through your training then. Signaller first then. How did they go about?
The Metropole Hotel, as I say, which is right on the front, we used to go there, and they had classrooms there, and they'd at the Morse keys, and then the instructor used to say, do it, da-da. And then we'd all have to do like that and things like that, and then he taught you the Morse code. He also taught you to drive there.
How did you take to Morse code? Because not everyone can do it.
Not too bad. You know, 12 words a minute was the... To pass your test, you had to send and read it 12 words a minute to start with. Then you got extra 9 pence a day if you did all that when you finished your training. But they taught you then. We used to go out on schemes across...
What other signal training did you have? Or was it just Morse?
I'd say a little side thing. It was a waste of time as far as teaching us Morse, because regimental signalers are all within 15 miles of one another, and all the wireless work that I did in Normandy and things like that was all RT, you know, voice.
Did you have any training in that?
Yeah, we used to go then out in the 1500 weight trucks. out across all across the Whitby Moors and sending messages to one another and things like that.
Now, how did this? What rate wireless? Was it the
19 sets then? Yeah, 19 sets. We did.
How did what was it to learn about the 19 wireless?
Well, it was like regarding a bit of all, really, you know, because it was netting and things like getting on net and things like that.
How would you do that? Well, people I don't know what this means, they see. So
I can't remember a lot about you tune in doings, and then there was a fine tuning knob, I think, until you got this. And then there was, if I remember, was it the 20? We had 22 sets when I went to the regiment, but it used to be four nuts there, like you could get a coin in and lock them, then you'd. Once you got, you could lock it on net, and you could flick off and flick back on. You should be set for your fine tuning. We used to, I remember that about that, and sending like Nan Love Able report your procedure. That was another thing. The CO was Sunray, and the adjutant was Seagull. They all had different code names and things like that. But we learned all that. We also learned driving.
Was there a set method of talking on the wireless? You know, this all well, this Roger and out stuff.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Like if you were on control, saying hello, say Nan Love Able. Hello, hello, all stations, Nan Love. You're working to a net. You got out stations. Hello, at Nan Love Able. Report my signals. Nan Love Able over. They've changed the phonetic alphabet since then. And then number one, you're hello, Nan Love Able one, strength 5. And you'd go like that. And then if you sent a message, you say hello, Nan Love Able, one, fetch some rail whoever's a bloke in charge here, a lot and things like that. And then, or if you want to add, say you hello, Nan Love Able, wait, over. And then you say, Nan Love Able, Roger out, always Roger out, you know, and then he'd be on listening watch. It's a long, long time ago. No, I can't remember that. But
that's similar. Now the driving side. How did they teach you to drive?
1500 weight.
Could you drive already?
No, I couldn't drive already. No. So
how did they do it? How did you?
Cause well, we started off. Used to take about four in a truck, back of an open 1500 weight truck in November, December, and January across the Yorkshire Moors. One in the front with the instructor, not a double gear. You know Yorkshire. I expect you've been to Yorkshire. It's one in fours and one in fives. So they teach you, and you've sat in the back, the three of you, and they'd be him in front, and you get to this hill, and he say, change down. Well, you know you had a double D clutch and rev and all that, and you hear him miss his revs, and you could hear him playing a tune on the gearbox and careering down his hill, the other three in the back of your life, and that's how we learned, like that, with a crash gear. You know, there's no crash gears now.
I mean, it's not like it is now, is it?
No.
Did you find it difficult?
It was difficult, yeah. I didn't mind changing. I could change up, but that changing down, getting the third, the second, the right amount of revs. You didn't... best part about it, you weren't out every day driving. You know, you had other... It was... Well, we used to do... you had your PT, just exactly the same there.
Did you learn on anything else other than the 1500?
No, it was only 1500 weight trucks, so that was... the basic truck there, you know, yeah. They taught you crash gear, and then when you got the synchro mesh on the little utility trucks, it was like driving in heaven sort of business when you got to...
Was the PT any different, or was that just more...
No, about this. About this, yeah, over the, down the... What's it? I think it was the spa dance hall or something on the cliffs. It was still there now. I went past it a couple of years ago. I think I'd done my PT or all that business. That's it. One incident there, we used to march down there, well, run down there, changing the billets, shorts, and don't matter how cold it was, and jog all the way, and then go down and wait for the PT. Anyway, we're there. He had a boxing ring in that corner there, and used to all the different boxing. But anyway, this Pella mine, who I paired up, was got up in the round, was doing a little bit of fancy, mucking about, sort of Charlie Chaplin stuff. So, and then come the PT instructor, tore him off a strip. He said, "Now I'll show you how to use that." And he made him put a pair of boxing gloves on and just bounce around and kept jabbing him in. Not hard, but he said, "You don't get in this ring unless you come in and do it properly." Yeah. But, so, yeah, we did our PT there.
Anything else? Now, this was the 52nd AA Regiment, Royal Artillery, but it was really for training signals.
Yeah, I haven't finished my training. I'm still...
Yeah. But it was mainly... That was its main role, to train...
To teach you Morse and to drive and maintenance. I can never get on with maintenance.
Tell me about maintenance, yes.
16 tasks. So, the army, I don't know what about now. 16 tasks. I know task 15 is 16 is tyre and tools. Tyres and tools, I can remember that. But the others, when it come round to carburetors and things like that. Well, thank God for all this taking it round the garage, because I'm just the same now with cars.
You couldn't get along with it?
Not really. I'd loads and loads of notes. Had them, I used to write me notes out and all that, and write them out at night, up in the billet and all things like that.
What was the problem? Did he not understand you?
I'm not mechanically minded that way. You want a bit of decorating done, yeah. I'll keep the car clean and all that and whatnot else, but not really under the bonnet. I want that sort of a... They didn't really... There wasn't much of a test on that when it came to passing your test. It was mostly on driving. You pass your driving and you pass your signals and your procedures and all things like that, you know.
And so anything else about your training before you came to your tests?
No, I came home. They sent us over on leave the 23rd of December, That was my first official leave there. 7 days leave, I came home. And I'd cross right down to Bristol and I'd be back on the 30th of December.
So back to Whitby?
Yeah, back to Whitby. But, no, I can't remember.
And how long were you at Whitby?
Well, I think I got posted on, it was the 9th of February, so that was about 12 weeks, really, 12 or 13 weeks.
1943, of course.
But yeah, 43 then, yeah. So from there, so we had our tests and...
How did you do your test? Tell me about that.
Well, I passed, but I was mustered. Not hot stuff, mustered at class 3 signal training, which gave me an extra 9 points a day.
Class 3 signal?
Class 3 signals, that was it. I can't remember why. It's in my pay book. I have my pay book.
Okay.
But it was class 3. I was mustered at class 3 then.
What was your next
course? Oh, well, while we were there, we also done the... gas test as well.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah. We done the gas. Well, I don't know what gas that was. We went through the gas chamber with gas and just had a little quick sniff out the side in out there. But we also did mustard gas with the liquid. When you went in, they put a dab on your hand, you know, and a bit of cotton waste and wiped it off to teach you what to do. You know, how it wasn't. Wasn't going to kill you if you dealt with it rapidly and then you wiped off and put the ointment on and come out. But that's a bit paybook as well. So I got all the dates in there, which I could have told you really if I'd have thought of it. So we done that, the gas visited.
Did you do any more weapons training with that?
No, there's no, never done, I can't say. No. Tell you something else about. We stood on our guards at night, which was...
Tell me about the guards.
Guards, which was Sands End Guard. The headquarters, we used to sleep, or we marched to the Metropole Hotel, and we used to do the Sands End Guard. It was four kit then, small pack and all that. They used to give you a rover then, and one blanket you could take out there. When you come off, you've done your 2 hours, you come off, four off, and back on for the other two. Anyway, my Pelly and I were on the same guard. He'd done one part of the Sands End and I'd done the other, and we used to pray up and then got back. We'd come back about 2 o'clock. I think we got it's changeover, and so it was cold, I say. There was no heat there. This was November, December, and so we put one blanket on the floor, all our clothes on, small packs for pillows, and put the other blanket over the top of us, side by side. And that's when I got a kick in the ribs. All for this NCO said, you don't sleep two together here, none of that in the army. And that's the first time I ever coming across anything like that. He wouldn't let the two of us, so we had to sleep and use our own blanket to sleep. None of that here sleeping. We had our clothes off him. I had something to moan, but we had all our clothes on, boots and everything, you know, just laying down there. But
you're just keeping warm.
Yeah. But anyway, that's what he said under that. But we used to do our guard from with the Metropole Hotel there. And that's they did have a. They had a Moors fire there, you know, it's heather, I suppose, out on the moors somewhere, and they decided it. They dragged us all out of our billets about 9 o'clock at night, and was loading us all up in the lorries to go out. Anyway, it was put out, so it was.
What do you remember of that? Or was it out by the time we got there?
It was out. We never got there. No, we just got in the lorries. We weren't very happy about it, but anyway, it was thankfully it being put out. So that was that. I did notice we used to drive around all the little. Villages, stays in whatnot else, like one of them I can remember, around where the railway is on all these wireless schemes. And a lot of them used to I suppose these farmers' wives used to do like little coffee, well, where you get a mug of tea then. So the truck, all these NCOs, the instructors knew all the little, and we used to pull in ever, so she used to invite us into the stone floored lounge. But what always took my memory was the size of bacon, smoked bacon hanging up on hooks in the roofs there. You know, bacon was rationed. You know, you would get 4 ounces a week or whatever it was home, but they had these great big soaks of bacon hanging out, all smoked, yeah.
The civilians were generally friendly, then, to the soldiers?
Yeah, well, those that were selling you, cups of tea, they always seemed real. I found people more friendly up north than what I did down at Brighton, which I'll cut if yeah, perhaps we'll get round to that later on.
But, right. Okay, so unless there's anything else, in February 43, you finish at Whitby. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then what's your next posting?
So I get posted then with 17 others. 18 of us went to 112 Light ACAT, which was the regiment I was in. That were in at Featherstone Park Camp, near Haltwhistle in Northumberland, Battle School. They were at their infantry battle school month. And we went from Whitby to there and got there in the dark. And then we got farmed out to these Nissen huts, this was. That was a primitive camp, if ever I've seen one.
In what way? What was wrong?
Well, I'll start off with the huts. I got posted, so double-tiered bunks there. And there was one bunk empty right up by the door, which I happened to plumb. Well, that was the only one that one I got sold across. It was called, the wind used to whistle through that door. But one of the old swatters there must have had a spare bag, and he said, "You are, you want that there?" And he slung it to me. But I remember all sat, they were out all day, you know, crawling about, being fired on fixed lines and all. And of course, they were back cleaning their clothes off and things like that. And there was one chap there when I got to this hut, halfway down, only about 3 single light bulbs. Everybody smoking and all that, things like that. He was sat on there on the top bunk playing a mandolin or something. And the song he was singing, while I'm saying this, he had a lovely voice. When the lights, there was a popular song, and when the lights go on again all over the world, he was singing, and I thought, oh, yeah, yeah, because I was like a bit of a sing-song, me. I still do. And funny enough, in 1944, he got wounded in the mouth and got a hair lift, and he never sung again. He had a lovely voice, so he used to sing in the pubs and that, but he finished up, yeah, a great big hair lip up there, yeah. But that was the only, but anyway, that was the huts there, so it was Revalley at 6 o'clock. And then we were out then, the Sergeant Major took charge of us there. Our ex-Coast Marine Guard Sergeant, he was a soldier. I admired him, actually.
What was he like? Tell us what he was
like.
Oh,
the smart man. Smart, tall, about 6'2", but, you know, his word was, as we go on, I could tell you a little story, if you'd rather. I've got a story about him.
All right, we'll hold him for a bit.
Yeah,
then, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so he took us for the 18. The 18, we come there. And the first thing that was said when I went, "Who are you?" "I'm a wireless operator." I knew it. We're training up. We were going abroad. That was the story that went on. Because soon as the signal sets would come, they had visions of being sent abroad. But anyway, he didn't. But anyway, the toilets. I'll tell you about the toilets. The toilets was...
This is at the camp?
At the camp, yeah. You know these great earthenware drains they used to have at one time? You used to see them sunk like a stone. What it was a line of them, and I think they used to pipe the river water off the Tyne down through there, and they had holes cut in the top and fired away to take the shirt. And it was to sit on there like hens on a roost, like you'd be sat here and another one sat there, and that was the toilet. That was the if you wanted to use your bowel, and that's how you sat there. There was no privacy or anything like that. England, that was the closest I got to commodore living as ever anything. So
did it bother you?
Well, I was a bit like, even then I'd been in then, like, and I worked in a man's world when I was in paper making. You know, I've never worked with women, you know, I've always worked with men, where a spade is a spade and a punch in the nose is also that sort of a life. But anyway, yeah, there was a bit, but...
Now, what exactly were you doing? You said you were...
Well, it was infantry, right, it was battle school, they gave you the battle school.
Now, what was the role of...
Well, they taught us all the same, under fire, to prepare you for, what you might say, active service, I suppose. All those... The troops and all that, they were treated as infantry, but they weren't gunners, they were treated as infantrymen, like, as I say, crawling under barbed wire with firing on fixed lines and Ben at charge. But the RSM took charge of us. I'll give you one.
So you were doing all this?
Yeah.
Did the battle school have a name? The battle school was at Featherstone Park Camp, was it?
That Featherstone Park Camp, yeah.
That was the battle school?
Yeah, that was the battle school there.
So what exactly were you doing?
Well, the RSM took charge of us, and the first day we marched us up to the headquarters. This is the, had the CO out there, had us all stuck there, like, you know, this is a new intake, I'm taking charge, right, so carry on. So we should go, so this particular day, I would, so take our Harris hat rations, one of